Hello, and you're welcome to this bonus episode of Irish Imperial Lives. I'm Kate O'Malley.
And I'm A.B. Philbin-Bowman. And if you're discovering this podcast for the first time, thank you. We will not bore you with podcast admin, but we do want to give you a very brief overview of why we're discussing this subject today. Myself and Kate are both Irish history nerds. Kate's a proper historian. I studied history and then got sidetracked into radio. But we started this project, as I think we said in episode one, because we felt that there were key incidents in Irish history: the Battle of Kinsale, the 1798 Rebellion, the 1916 Rising, all of which are crucial and important and have been dealt with extensively in pretty much every Irish history book you'll open. But they all portray our resistance to the British Empire.
And the reality is a little messier and more complex. So for this project, we wanted to cast our nets a little wider, beyond those who stayed in Ireland, and look at some of the lesser known stories of Irish people who travelled overseas and explore their encounters with the British Empire to reach a deeper, more complex understanding of our own history. And to this end, we dropped an episode in July 2024 on the Irish in the Caribbean. It was called Slave Owners and Whistleblowers with the wonderful Dr. Catherine Healy from Epic Museum.
And we couldn't have planned this because we recorded the episode in advance. But in the 2 week period before that episode dropped, firstly, Donald Trump survived an assassination attempt. Then Joe Biden dropped out of the 2024 presidential race, and Kamala Harris very quickly became the presumptive nominee. And literally within 2 hours of our show dropping, the story appeared on the Irish Times going, Kamala Harris has an ancestral link to Ireland and it is to a Jamaican slave owner. At which point we went, oh my God, how did we miss this story? We need to cover this. People sent us emails saying, hey, you should cover this. This is a thing. Listeners said it to us in person. Hence today's episode. This does create a slightly surreal element for a podcast that looks at the British Empire. The arrival of a presidential candidate whose heritage is predominantly Black, Jamaican and Indian.
Yeah.
Two of the groups who famously suffered under the British Empire, it might seem perverse to go, hey, we found this one person who profited from that empire in the most cruel and horrific of ways.
We're focusing on the nasty Irish guy, A.B.
Yeah, we're focusing on the one of the least sympathetic people we've encountered in this whole series.
Yeah.
But the reason we're doing that is because he's Irish and our focus is Irish imperial lives. And we were covering the Caribbean already. If somebody out there is making podcasts about the Black Jamaican experience or Kamala Harris's Indian ancestors, we'd be very interested to learn about that. It's not our area of expertise, and that's why we're not exploring that. But if it's out there, please, all facts are friendly. We're more than happy to hear it.
I also think it's important to note, though, that it does provide a really interesting contrast to the old, and let's face it, quite predictable, JFK, Reagan, and more recently, obviously, Biden's links to Ireland and the stories of poverty-stricken Irish ancestors done good. This is a very different story. So it's interesting.
And the whole reason we started this project as Irish people was to say, much as we have predominantly suffered under the British Empire, there's a slightly more complicated story to tell here. And I think that's very much the spirit in which Kamala Harris's father, Donald, openly admitted that his family, while the vast majority of her ancestors had suffered under the empire, also had this ancestral link to this guy, Hamilton Brown, which we think was the Hamilton Brown we're going to discuss. There's a little bit of ambiguity about that, which Catherine Healy discusses later on in the episode. It's also worth stating, as we covered in episode 3, that Kamala Harris is certainly not the only prospective US president to have a family who took serious issue with the British Empire. It'll probably surprise nobody to learn that George Washington and all of the founding fathers had a very complicated relationship with the British Empire. Though, if anyone's listening to this podcast in 1760s England, they will be shocked. What unrest in the 13 colonies? My goodness, what can we do about this?
Yeah, and then also it's important to say that Kamala Harris's story and the one that we'll be talking to Catherine about in a little bit is by no means unique. In several recent Who Do You Think You Are programmes, those produced both in the UK and the USA, there are kind of unexpected complex stories that have emerged of well-known TV and film personalities, you know, people like Ainsley Harriott, TV chef, that were Naomi Harris, the actress, who had ancestors who were plantation owners and or owners of enslaved people in the Caribbean.
So without further ado, here is Dr. Catherine Healy, the historian in residence at EPIC, the Irish Emigration Museum, talking about Kamala Harris's presumed Irish ancestor, Hamilton Brown. I started out by asking Catherine about his early life.
Hamilton Brown was an Antrim man, born into a Presbyterian family. He was born in 1766, just outside Ballymoney. And he moved to Jamaica as a young man. And Jamaica at this point in time was one of Britain's most important colonies. It was a colony run on the backs of enslaved Africans. About 90% of the population would have been enslaved by the time the Hamilton Brown arrived. So he was entering a very unequal society, and he gradually made moves to propel himself into that elite. He started out as a bookkeeper, and within a few years he had become a very substantial landowner. He had a number of plantations to his name, including one that he named after Antrim. And these were plantations very heavily reliant on enslaved labour. He would have had 124 enslaved people, for example, on his books by 1817. He was a magistrate as well. He was an elected member of the Colonial Assembly for many years. And he founded a town known as Brownstown, which still exists today. If you go there, you can still find his headstone in the Anglican cemetery there.
So how significant were his Jamaican holdings, Catherine, in comparison, say, to other plantation owners there at the time?
Yeah, he would have been one of the bigger plantation owners at that point in time. You can see from the compensation records that he would have received over 2 million euro in today's money as reimbursement for his so-called loss of property. And that's, you know, about double how Peter Brown received as the owner of two plantations. And being a magistrate, and not only did he own a number of plantations, but he was the executor, and then he was a business manager of sorts for many plantations, and would have been entitled to a cut of the money from compensation for those too.
One of the sources that survives about him comes from a Methodist minister who was touring at the time, a guy called Henry Whiteley. And I just want to read a brief section of this. He describes dining with Hamilton Brown and says, "I was rather startled to hear that gentleman swear by his maker that the order should never be adopted in Jamaica." This is the order abolishing slavery. "Nor would the planters of Jamaica," he said, "permit the interference of the home government with their slaves in any shape." A great deal was said by him and others present about the happiness and comfort enjoyed by the slaves and of the many advantages possessed by them, of which the poor in England were destitute. So essentially Hamilton Brown is trying to make the case that his enslaved peoples are happier and better off than the poor back in England.
Yeah, he was a complete apologist for the whole system. And if you read that pamphlet, Henry Whiteley, the Methodist missionary, makes very clear just how brutal the conditions were and how viciously enslaved people, even children, were treated by planters. He has a very graphic account of the reality of conditions at that point in time. He was Hamilton Brown, a very vocal opponent of emancipation.
I actually have that passage here. He's describing watching plantation workers being forced to spread manure while being whipped. He writes, "It appeared to me disgustingly dirty work, for the moisture from the manure was dripping through the baskets and running down the bodies of the Negroes. This sight annoyed me considerably and raised some doubts as to the preferable condition of West India slaves to factory children. The thundering crack of the cart whip sounding in my ears as I rode along, excited feelings in a very unpleasant description." So, in the language of the time, but my God, he's clearly outraged by that comparison. Mm-hmm. And Hamilton Brown wasn't just a vocal opponent. He actively lobbied against William Wilberforce, who, of course, is the man who brings in or leads the charge to abolish slavery.
Yeah, he was very critical of William Wilberforce, obviously a leader in the abolition campaign. He spoke against his efforts in very strong terms in the Jamaican House of Assembly, described him as hypocritical, as cloven-footed. So, yeah, he didn't change his stance at all for many years.
And finally then, can you just tell us a little bit about the link with Kamala Harris? It's been claimed by her father, but as far as we know, it's not decisively proven. What do we know?
We know that it is likely that Kamala Harris's great-great-great-grandparent was a man named Hamilton Brown. There was another Hamilton Brown living in Brownstown sometime later who it could have potentially been alternatively. Her father has linked the family and lineage directly to Hamilton Brown of Antrim, but that has not been conclusively proven.
So we need to ask a difficult question here, Catherine, and treat it sensitively because it does address issues like rape and abuse on plantations by plantation owners and workers. How common is mixed ancestry in the Caribbean?
Yeah, I mean, many, many Jamaican people of mixed heritage may be descended from plantation owners or are also descended from enslaved people. And there are many examples of white plantation owners raping enslaved women on their plantations. And so they're very sensitive histories.
Of course. Thank you so much for treating them sensitively and telling us about them. So thank you so much for listening to this bonus episode. As we said earlier, this is very much a companion piece to our longer episode on the Irish of the Caribbean, slave owners and whistleblowers, which will give you a broader sense, I think, of the Irish impact on Jamaica and other parts of the Caribbean.
Also, I think it's important to kind of give a shout out for our listeners to be aware of the University College London's Legacies of British Slavery database. This is a free and open database of compensation that was received by various plantation and owners of enslaved people after abolition. And if you just pop in Ireland there in the search engine, you're going to see lots of names of Irish people throughout the island of Ireland who owned plantations and who were compensated after the abolition of slavery. And it's a really fascinating insight. And I think a lot of the recent discussions have been driven by the fact that lots of this primary source material is now open and there for everybody to see and engage with. So it's wonderful.
And you were saying to me earlier, if you stick Ireland into that database, you get almost 200 hits of various persuasions, religions, backgrounds,
yeah,
geographies,
exactly.
All benefiting from this horrific trade.
You'll get your How Peter Brown, who we looked at in the previous episode with Catherine that aired that evening. You'll get Foley's from Toom. You'll get the Latouches from Dublin. All persuasions of people left to try and improve their lot and certainly did in the Caribbean.